The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome this hour. Yesterday, we talked about foreclosures. We're going to keep talking about housing today, as we did yesterday, but in a different vein. We're going to talk about the question of the affordable housing in our communities, about the city's plan to have a land bank and what that might mean. And it deals with the 30,000 vacant properties in this community, many of them that are owned by the city, vacant properties and also vacant lots, and what the future may hold for them. We'll be talking about that with Paul Graziano, who's the Baltimore Housing Commissioner. We're also going to do a little talking together with our other guests and you about thinking outside the box a little bit here about the future of housing in our community. If you look around the country, look around the United States of America, we have a new president of the United States of America, if you haven't noticed, and people are talking all around the country about different ways of seeing what our communities could be. We have all this vacant land in Baltimore. Does it all have to be a house? Does it all have to be a building? Does it all have to be sold to developers or people who want to build homes? Could we have urban agriculture instead? We'll talk a bit about that later on in the program. There are lots of options and ideas about what this city of ours should look like and what this community should look like. And we want your thoughts and ideas on that. We're joined this hour in the very beginning by Paul Graziano, Baltimore Housing Commissioner. A little bit later on, we'll introduce you to our other guests who are joining us as well. Robert Strupp. Bob Strupp is Director of Research and Policy with the Community Law Center. You heard his voice yesterday on one of our news reports here when we talked about foreclosures. Karen Blandford will be joining us a bit later as well, and she's Executive Director of the Maryland Asset Building and Community Development Network, which deals with affordable housing in our communities as well. And the number here is 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. What do you think should be done with all these vacant houses in Baltimore, these 30,000 properties, 17,000 vacant houses, 13,000 vacant lots? What should be done with them here in the city of Baltimore? Some of them are owned by the city. Some are privately held. How do we recreate a new community in our midst with all this land? We have an opportunity with the stimulus package coming. What is Baltimore going to do with that stimulus package? Your time to ask questions and think creatively with us at 410-319-8888. And Paul Graziano, welcome. Good to have you for the first time in our new digs.
Yes, thank you very much, Mark. And I love the view out here.
It's a much better view, isn't it?
It is. It
is. Inside and out.
Yes.
And Bob Strupp, good to have you in the studio with us.
Good afternoon.
And Karen Blandford will be here shortly. But, Paul, let me begin to talk a bit about what we talked about here at the beginning of the show. And I want you to describe, from your perspective, an idea of a land bank, which is not a new one.
Right.
I remember it was maybe several years ago on another show that I had, you described the land bank.
Yes.
We were beginning to talk about that some years back as a way to kind of take the blight out of the city. But let me start somewhere else, we'll go right to the land bank.
Sure.
I want you to describe
them,
we'll bring all the guests in. Now, the sustainability package has a lot to do with the future of housing in Baltimore, and the money coming from the federal government.
Right.
And I have two questions about that. One is, and this question might be difficult for you to answer because you're the housing official working for the mayor, but I think it's a question that has to be asked, which is the mayor has now been snubbed twice by the president of the United States of America, once when he came through the city and just recently with the mayor's conference. And the fear that a lot of people have in Baltimore, not that the mayor is not doing a good job in this city. People like a lot of it like what she's doing for the city of Baltimore and how hard she's working with the community. But if her influence is being put in the backwaters in some senses by some people, how is that going to affect our ability to put our plan in front of the president and the Congress and to get the money that we need to do the work we have to do in this city? I mean, let's just start there.
Well, Mayor Dixon and her team, of which I am a part, of course, have worked very hard to put together a comprehensive package, and we met just yesterday under the deputy mayor to talk about the broad range of stimulus items. Many of those items are formula allocated. That is to say, you get a certain amount of money depending on the size of your city and the level of poverty and so forth. And those are really extensions of programs that are out there already. There certainly should be no issue with those. And there are other competitive allocations, processes. We talked about that. I know that Mayor Dixon works very closely with the entire delegation, federal delegation, and I have no reason to believe that we'll be in any way diminished in our ability to get the maximum amount of funds for the city of Baltimore. We're all working very, very hard at it under the mayor's leadership and with the full support of the federal delegation.
So what is our sustainability plan? What is the sustainability plan for Baltimore? What are we saying to the governor and to the Congress and White House about what Baltimore City wants to do and how much money we need and where it's going to be applied when it comes to, let's say, housing in Baltimore and how that's working?
Sure. Well, our housing approach is really one that we've put in place over the last several years, and this stimulus package really just allows us to build upon that. It's a very important additional source of money, but it is going to build on what we have, so we're not starting anew here. And what the broad elements are, one, a major a plan to eliminate major pockets of blight throughout the city. So it started with the Hope 6 program, eliminating the high-rise public housing, family public housing. We've undertaken a number of other sites like Uplands and Claremont Freedom and so forth. So those major sources of blight were affecting in a very, very serious and negative way the surrounding communities. So we had to get rid of those first. It also relates to the affordable housing program fund that was created specifically. You may recall at the time that the hotel bond issue was made for the Convention Center Hotel. That was money specifically set aside, $59.8 million, to acquire and clear sites to create development parcels for future development of mixed income, including very much affordable housing. So that was a very important second piece. At the same time, that would eliminate smaller pockets of blight, not the huge pieces that I mentioned before. In addition, the inclusionary housing ordinance was another important piece of the program. And we've already seen that be a very effective device for us in terms of negotiating with owners on a couple of different projects, and we'll be seeing others. I just yesterday brought on a person who will be dealing full-time with the inclusionary housing issue on my staff. We've also created the Office of Neighborhood Investment to get down to the level of working with the community development corporations on smaller community-based efforts. We also work very closely with and support financially on an ongoing basis the neighborhood Healthy Neighborhoods Inc. With Mark Sisman, and I sit on that board. So we're working very closely there. The thought being, let's intervene in communities before they become redevelopment areas. Let's work with the community-based organizations and organizations like the Healthy Neighborhoods to intervene in those places, because it really is a lot more humane and a lot cheaper, frankly, to go in and work with people to help buttress efforts and bolster values. We think it's been a program that's been very successful. We saw a steady increase in the values of property in the city of Baltimore right up until the end of 2008, actually, when you saw decline in surrounding communities. Baltimore City, if you look at the statistics, was still going up at a slower pace, of course. But what it says to me is that we had a situation where it wasn't a wildfire situation out of control, rampant inflation and prices. It was a more steady, reasoned approach. And I think the fundamentals are there. We're within 40 miles of D.C. There's a lot of industry related to federal government, a lot of that whole sector. And, of course, the BRAC, base realignment program, will bring many jobs to this area, and we're confident we'll get a big share of those. So we've got a lot of pieces in place. The stimulus package really enables us to build on that in many ways.
Paul Graziano is with us now. We'll join me with some of the guests very shortly. We're talking about housing in Baltimore. Number is 410-319-8888. I'd like to know your experiences in finding affordable housing in the city to rent or to buy. Your thoughts on what we do to make the city not just a livable, but a lovely place and a community place to live in. where we can design new town centers, new ways of living in this town. Is it possible? What are your thoughts? 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Explain to us a bit, Paul, about, before we launch into the broader discussion,
Sure. The
land bank, which is the first reason your office contacted us about you coming on, was to talk about the land bank,
right,
which will be part of this conversation today.
You want me to specifically describe the land bank?
Please
yes,
do.
Okay. Well, the land bank, it would be a land bank authority, which means it's a public, publicly controlled authority. It's not a private corporation. It is enabled under state legislation. We had Mayor Dixon sought and obtained the approval from the state legislature to create a land bank. And then the next step was to take it to the city council. In between those two steps, we last summer had a task force that was appointed by the mayor that looked at all issues related to creating a land bank and why it would be a good thing to do. That task force reported out and gave us some very good ideas, which led to the legislation that's now been introduced. It'll be before the Planning Commission shortly, and then there'll be hearings at the City Council, and we're expecting that there will be a lot of lively debate about it. But it's a very, very innovative program. It's not unique. I mean, there are large cities around the country, Atlanta, St. Louis, Cleveland, Louisville. Genesee County in Michigan is one that fascinates us in many ways because Flint, Michigan, being the center of that, is kind of one of the epicenters of deindustrialization and job loss. They've been very, very successful in dealing with abandoned property and property that was just that many thought had no useful life going forward. They've been able to turn that around and have some real successes. What it enables us to do is, again, to continue to tackle the blight issue in the city, to continue to be able to assemble land for affordable and mixed income housing and other uses, as you pointed out. It won't all be housing. It enables us to be creative in the way in which these the financing mechanisms are designed. For example, the land bank could do certain things the city cannot do. It can pledge its assets. It can pledge the land of the land bank and borrow against those assets. City charter provisions really don't allow us to do that at the city. The land bank, frankly, would be a much more nimble, flexible entity to operate in a market which is especially difficult right now. I'd say now more than ever, we need the land bank. One day, in the current legislation, it doesn't call for it, but one day, under state law, we could actually have the land bank issuing bonds independent of the city. So there's a lot of things that the land bank
bonds
can do.
To do what?
To help facilitate development deals and site assembly and so forth. I want to emphasize that there are protections built in here. The land bank does not have the power of eminent domain. I want to make that clear to folks. Only the city of Baltimore has the eminent domain authority. The land bank must operate under the Maryland open meeting laws so that all their meetings are open to the public. The board of the land bank would include the mayor, the council president, the comptroller, the housing commissioner, the planning director, and the finance director. And then five citizens of the city. So there is ample accountability there because there will be elected and publicly appointed officials who must serve on that board and must respond to the criticisms about the activities of the authority. I think it's an extremely important entity, as I said, now more than ever. The other thing, maybe seems more intangible, but I know from my own experience, the land bank will have a single focus. They will be dealing with those 10,000 assets that we currently own and others that they'll acquire. We have scores of activities in the housing department and in many other departments who work with us. So this will be a single purpose authority, and I am convinced that they'll be able to generate all kinds of interesting activity and be able to, as I said, be much more nimble about it.
Paul Graziano is our Baltimore Housing Commissioner. We're talking about the land bank. We're talking about the stimulus package coming to Baltimore. We're talking about how we redevelop the city and what it's going to look like. What will our communities look like? It's your turn to join this conversation at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. We're also joined in the studio by Bob Strupp, Director of Research and Policy with the Community Law Center, who will join our conversation now. And we're awaiting Karen Blandford, Executive Director of their Maryland Asset Building and Community Development Network, all of whom, as nonprofits, have a stake in where the future of the city is going in terms of our land bank. And Bob, welcome into the conversation. Good to have you here as well.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Let me open the phones first, and then we'll come to our questions for the commissioner, and all of you can join in on that as we look at what this land bank will mean. How will the city look? This is a very critical time in the future of the city. The land bank could mean either, and I'm not saying you're going to do this, Paul, but it can either mean massive development, as we've seen in the harbor, with developers having all the power. It could mean town centers. It could mean redistribution of the way we do housing in Baltimore in a very creative and new way, building a new city. We're at the cusp, with Obama as the head of this nation, of building a new society. What will it look like in Baltimore? This is your time to join the conversation at 410-319-8888. Let's first go to Katie in Baltimore. Katie, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Katie.
My question is about the past initiatives that were directed towards areas like Reservoir Hill, and I'm wondering what the city's plan is on following through with some of those. I currently live in a historic property and was part of the Legacy Foundation, which is part of the State of Maryland's initiative, and I've seen those funds redirected in other places, and the crime in this area has really spiked since in the 5 years that I've been here. I've seen it get worse, actually.
So what are you very specifically talking about in terms of what you consider lack of follow-through on in what area?
I'm in the upper Utah Madison area, and
But I want our listeners to understand what you're saying.
Okay.
Go ahead, Katie.
I was just involved with the Legacy Foundation, which is the state of Maryland, and it works on the working to fix up the inside of your house and the exterior as well. But I was wondering more about the safety issues and how do you apply those initiatives to the streets and to the place where it really makes a difference, and not just for the interior of the homes. Like, I understand that the money that I was given is now, they said they're redirecting the funds to other places, but they have agreed that it has not actually done what they were hoping to do for the neighborhood.
Okay. Paul, would you like to respond?
Sure. Reservoir Hill is a very exciting place in terms of what we accomplished over a period of time, and it needs more work. It frankly does. And in fact, just yesterday, I mentioned the meeting that we had with the deputy mayor and the whole development team to talk about the stimulus package. In that very same meeting, my staff, together with Mark Sisman, made a presentation to the development group about specific initiatives in Reservoir Hill to jumpstart the activity. What we had in Reservoir Hill was a period of time several years ago when nobody wanted to invest anything in Reservoir Hill. The city of Baltimore, my housing department, went out and affirmatively acquired a lot of land, a lot of properties. We packaged a lot of it and put it out, and it was developed, rehabbed very successfully. A lot of new homeowners came in and bought and did some wonderful rehabs. That was all going along very nicely. And then when the credit markets just went crashing, you can literally see in Reservoir Hill streets where you have all different levels of in the continuum from a totally rehabbed and reoccupied house to a totally abandoned house, and everything in between, where contractors were in midstream and they had to stop because they couldn't get financing and all. What we have recognized is that we have to take redouble our efforts there because of what's happened with the markets and with the real estate markets, but also the capital markets of this nation. So what we talked about also was not just that it's a real estate issue; it is about basic city services. So we're going to move forward with a concerted effort to really beef up security and street cleaning and code enforcement and a whole range of other things in that area to make sure that we can encourage the further investment in Reservoir Hill to finish the job that we started.
So that's a commitment you're making here.
That is absolutely the commitment.
Okay, we'll all follow up on that together, so glad you called that in. Let's go one more call before we open a conversation with our guests here. Tracy in Baltimore, you're on the air. Hi, Tracy, you there? Did we lose Tracy? Okay, Tracy's gone. Before we go back to the phones at 410-319-8888, get to Mike and the others who are calling in. 410-319-8888 is the number here to join us. Write to us here at SteinerShow at gmail.com. In the studio with me is Paul Craziano, Baltimore Housing Commissioner, Bob Strupp, Director of Research Policy with Community Law Center, and Karen Blandford, Executive Director of the Maryland Asset Building and Community Development Network. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at SteinerShow at gmail.com. The future of the city could change drastically with the land bank, with acquiring these vacant properties and empty lots and empty and abandoned houses. What should we do with them? How should they look? What should be the plan? And what is the transparency? 410-319-8888 is the number here. So let's talk about what we have here. We have in Baltimore City, maybe, we're not quite sure. I hear all kinds of numbers, of the exact numbers of houses, but 17,000 vacant homes and perhaps 13,000 vacant lots, 10,000 of which are owned by the city, if I have that right.
Right.
One third. So the question is, what should be done with them? And let me just put this on the table first before we talk about the other stuff, is that there's been a history in this city, and it's the nature of not just Baltimore City, but I think every city in the nation, just about, where developers have a huge amount of political sway in this town, and they do elsewhere, because they have a lot of political muscle, they have a lot of money, they develop inner harbors, they do all the other things that they do. And they become like the defense contractors of local government in some ways in terms of their influence in politics. And there's always been this relationship between developers and cities in terms of developing empty spaces and properties. So here we have a unique opportunity. And there's always a question of transparency, especially in these quasi-governmental agencies, despite having public members on the panel and cabinet members on the panel. And so what is to ensure that nonprofits of lesser means than deep-pocketed developers, though some of those pockets are getting a little shallower these days, that we're going to have a different way of figuring out what to do with the future of those empty properties. And you can start, Paul, if you'd like the two of you to come in and have your own questions and thoughts about this, because you both represent the nonprofit world here.
Well, thank you, Mark, because that's an important question, and I want to be very clear. First of all, as I indicated, the composition of the board will demand that there be accountability. The open meeting law will ensure that all the meetings are truly open. Beyond that, I would say specifically that the policies of the land bank, which will be promulgated by the land bank and then must be approved by the Board of Estimates as the legislation is currently drafted, would include some very specific things that came out of the task force. Now, the task force was a very broad coalition of folks who represented all different perspectives, and a lot of community-based folks were on the task force. One of the major things that we talked about was the notion that plans – that first of all, the land bank will take a neighborhood-based approach. That's the only rational – you can't – it's meaningless to talk about 30,000 vacant properties. It doesn't mean anything. You've got to look at it neighborhood by neighborhood to understand what's the context of the vacant houses and vacant lots in that particular neighborhood. So they'll take a neighborhood approach, just as the city has. One of the basic principles will be that no development shall take place in a neighborhood that will be facilitated by the land bank unless it is consistent with either a specific officially adopted neighborhood plan or consistent with the broad aspirations of a community. In other words, there are many, many, many scores of neighborhood plans that have been officially adopted by the city. When looking at proposals that come in to the land bank, they will be required to look at the consistency between that proposal and the plan that's been officially adopted for that community. And, of course, community members are going to be able to come in and comment on any at the public hearing of the public meetings of the land bank. So I'm very confident of that. And the other thing I would say is a lot of what the land bank will be doing, because it is neighborhood based, the big developer types usually tend to gravitate toward downtown and the waterfront. And I think there'll be a different focus in these neighborhood based efforts. And we will, in particular, look to work very closely with neighborhood-based groups that have a commitment to the neighborhoods, and we will be partnering with neighborhood housing, healthy neighborhoods as well.
Bob and Karen, Bob, why don't you start?
Well, the Law Center actually had an opportunity to provide some feedback to the task force, and one of the issues that we had commented on had to do with nonprofit developers having a shot at some of the property before it might go out into the market for the for-profit developers. And I think if that were part of the mix, then it would take some of the bite out of the influence that the developers have. So I do think there's some merit to that. Also, I think one of the things that Commissioner, you said that I would like to address is the idea that the larger developers tend to be looking at downtown and the harbor. Actually, I think the idea here and the opportunity here is to be different. And while the best practices of some of the other land banks around the country is certainly worth taking a look at,
sure,
here's an opportunity to develop at a dense scale, perhaps outside of the currently developed areas. And we might be looking at, you know, the west side or the east side or whatever, where we could be doing something a little bit different than we're currently doing it. But I think that it is important that the nonprofit developers would have an opportunity to compete and perhaps even have a first look to see how they might be able to use these properties in a multi-use way, not just in turning them, again, into housing.
Okay, let me ask you this same question. Then I have a question for all three of you about that. Go ahead.
I think we should.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I think we should understand that they're not mutually exclusive. It is not uncommon for a smaller nonprofit developer to pair up with a larger for-profit developer to develop a full range of housing. Mm-hmm. So we've really got a scale of affordable housing development, some done by large developers, some done by small nonprofit developers, and frequently in partnership. And hopefully all three will be able to take advantage of
that. Here's the question I have, though. I'm really curious about this one thing, and then I think Jonice, I want you to hold on. I want to get you a question about homesteading and have you on the show, and then Mike from Ellicott City, next two callers, will get you on here. But I want to raise this question and also have you, our listeners, respond to this as well at 410-319-8888. It seems to me that there's a lot of, and with all due respect to all of you here and people in this world who are in this business, there's a lot of non-creative thinking going on about what the city should be. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do we do that's different? What do you do that actually makes a difference? You know, when I was walking around with Dante Wilson a couple of weeks ago on the west side of Baltimore, not far from University of Maryland, which is outside of downtown, but I know that it's a better economic times. Developers would be salivating to get those houses, to build houses, to push doctors in them where people already live them and neighborhoods are there in some of the poorest parts of our city. But the question is, there's a neighborhood. You have vacant houses all over the place. You have lots that are empty. Nothing's on these lots. What's stopping Baltimore from thinking differently about working with private developers, nonprofits, and the city itself to create town centers where you actually create communities out of blighted neighborhoods, where you take a square block of vacant houses, vacant property, and turn it into an urban farm? There are cities like Minneapolis right now that are making urban agriculture employ hundreds of people with living wages and new food supplies, where you take blocks and turn them into solar panels, where you do something that's really very different and not just the same old, let's build a house, find ownership, because everything in the world is not about ownership. It's about affordable housing and decent neighborhoods. So what about thinking really very differently in this city about what we can do with it, rather than the same old, get a land bank, which is a great idea, find some developers, develop new housing, and think about different things we can do the community that we live in?
Well, Well, I think that's an excellent idea, and I think we do have that opportunity. I think we also have to remember that you've mentioned several times, you know, the 30,000 vacant lots and houses that we have in the city. That's a vestige of a time when our population was much larger than it is, and we don't necessarily need all that to be housing today, because our population is smaller. We don't need to be an 800,000 populated city again. We might just want to be the best 600 and some not that. Actually, somebody told me that. I'm admitting that I'm stealing that line. Want to be the best 600,000 population city. You know, we don't have to be an 800,000 city. So we can look at the housing stock doesn't need to be replaced with more housing stock. And so the question is, how do we use this land, and how do we put it to the best use? And it might be that we're going to assemble pieces, and we might be trading a lot here for a couple of lots there, and working with developers and individual homeowners. But I think we do need to look at it. It doesn't all have to be housing. Housing's the keystone, and housing clearly has been the lack of affordable housing has clearly presented us with a lot of problems in the last. Recognizing that we didn't have affordable housing has put us where we are. But and affordable housing is going to get us out. But housing isn't the only answer. And as Karen knows, the Law Center was very active this past year, a couple of years. It always has been. But I was involved with trying to collaborate with other groups and other issues, not just housing. It's education. It's transportation. All of that has to work together
I'm going to give us a 90 seconds to get our creative juices flowing here and think about what this town might look like in a very different way. And ask our listeners to join us at 410-319-8888. Jonice and Mike, you're the next two callers up. We want to have your thoughts on this as well. And as we go to a very short break, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 70 years later, they're still here to help people during difficult times. For more information, go to MECU.com and stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late, Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We're talking this hour about the future of housing in Baltimore City. It's not just about Baltimore. This could be any city in America and any town in our state of Maryland. As we talk about what to do with the future of housing in Maryland. There's a land bank being offered up. It's being debated in the city council. What will that look like? Will there be transparency? Will it work? Can it actually buy up the vacant houses and all the vacant lots and turn the city into a new city, a green city? What do you think? 410-319-8888 is the number here. Paul Graziano, the Baltimore City Housing Commissioner, is here as one of our guests. Bob Strupp is Director of Research and Policy with the Community Law Center. Karen Blandford is Executive Director of the Maryland Asset Building and Community Development Network. 410-319-8888 is the number here. The question is, can we think creatively about all this land we have, all this property, how to build a new city? Karen?
Well, in any crisis, there's opportunity. Last Friday, there was a meeting between the Maryland Asset Building Community Development Network, the Baltimore Neighborhood Collaborative, Associated Black Charities, and foundations and funders about how do we work together best to create a new vision out of this crisis. And I think people are trying to pull together and say, hey, we have a lot of vacant housing. What can we do that is bigger than what we've done before?
And so, I'm sorry, I finished what you're saying. Can I mean to stop you in the middle of your thought?
Go ahead.
No, please.
One of the things that we're doing statewide that will impact the city as well is we've introduced legislation for community land
Land Trust?
Land Trust, thank you. Which is another tool for affordable housing development. Now, that's on the home ownership side. We recognize there's a huge need for rental housing. And as you said, and not everyone should be an owner.
As we've learned in this housing crisis.
That's right. That's right. But there still is a real need for workforce housing. And a community land trust, unlike other ways of developing affordable housing, ensures permanent affordability. It's not just 5 years, 10 years, or 30 years, the life of a mortgage, because the land itself is what's subsidized by the nonprofit. So we're really hoping that the Maryland legislature will pass this legislation, give us another tool that is revenue neutral, but will become one small part of the solution of remaking all those vacant properties.
So, Paul, let me ask you. I mean, you city governments have never been what people think as a reservoir of creative thinking. Mm. They're not. They have not. I mean, we think usually straight down the line. So here you have this huge opportunity to make this city, just transform the city literally with this land. But you could transform what we look like, how people live. So, I mean.
Well, there are tremendous opportunities. There are obviously tremendous challenges, but out of challenges come further opportunities. And one of the things I did mention on the break is a critical piece of this that goes beyond the land bank itself is mass transit. And the Red Line, which will run east to west across the city, is an and out to the counties, a county will be an extremely critical piece. We talked about creating these urban centers.
Yep.
We know that there are some nodes along that red line that would be natural, what are called transit-oriented development sites. For instance, right now we're assembling land, 11 acres of land in Poppleton, immediately abutting the University of Maryland life science buildings. And there is a developer designated for there, and the top end of that is will be one of the stops for the Red Line, so that will be a higher density node with a mix of uses and so forth. The Uplands development will be further out, also a stop on the Red Line. There are other opportunities that are not yet developed, say like Harlem Park and so forth, that are along where there's a lot of vacant land that we own. So I think having a good mass transit system, we're also looking at the creation of a stop on the commuter line at EBDL, East Baltimore Development Area, that would create opportunities for that whole corridor, not only East Baltimore Development itself, but the area to the north of it going into Broadway East. So there's a lot of opportunity there to combine the efforts of the production of mass transit lines together with this land bank and other efforts we're undertaking. I'd also like to say that you talked about urban gardening. We're working on a proposal right now to create urban gardening in Cherry Hill at a site that the Housing Authority owns that has been cleared and is really deemed not to be buildable. So we're looking at that site as one of our first models.
And to be clear, when I was talking about urban agriculture, I wasn't talking about gardening. I was talking
they would actually
urban farms.
They would actually produce things that would be sold. I'm not just talking about trees and so forth that would be sold. It wouldn't be just pretty flowers, not to have anything against flowers.
Well, I like flowers too. Yes. But I like what Minnesota's doing right now and what they're doing in Minneapolis on urban agriculture is groundbreaking in this country. Mm-hmm. And it could change the nature of what our cities look like and change the way people eat and how people make a living. I mean, there's some really new things that could happen. Let's open the phones, see what people think here. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. And Jonice, you're on the air.
Hi, good evening, everyone.
Hi, Jonice.
Good evening.
My question, and please forgive me, I know it's a little bit off-center here, but I was calling and inquiring about the Homestead Act. I think that came out in dealing with the property tax. Am I correct? Do you know what I'm talking about?
The Homestead Act? What specifically about it? I'm sorry.
Well, I received it where I live, and we were asked to submit, fill out to complete the form in regards to the Homestead Act.
To confirm that you're the homeowner living in the property.
Yes.
And so what I'm sorry.
I guess my question is, what was the purpose of that?
Well, there is a preferential treatment, if you will, for people who live in the owner occupants of a property over investor properties. So if you live in the property, you'll get a tax break, and so it's all very important to get that in there.
Okay, all right. Okay.
If you have any questions on it, you can certainly call my office, and we'll have somebody help you out. It's 410-396-3232.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Janice. 410-319-8888. Mike in Ellicott City. You've been hanging on for a long time. You're on the air. Mike, you there?
Gentlemen, yeah, I'm here. You got me?
You're on the air.
Glad to hear it. Look, this idea of new thinking, you guys ain't making it. I don't know how to be more blunt about it. I remember 30 years ago, they were talking about Reservoir Hill. It was like Yogi Berra said, listening to you all talk about it, it's like deja vu all over again. It's the same old. There's too many damn poor people, and the bankers can't make enough money off of us. There's a worldwide depression going on.
There is.
Whatever we're going to do to solve this housing crisis is going to be conditioned on figuring out what caused that depression and to solve it, to get rid of it. And I believe the only way to do that is to... This system don't work anymore. This system where the wealthy own everything and rule us, we got to think of how to get rid of it, how to replace the way society is organized now with a cooperative society where people take care of each other and make sure that they have housing and decent lives. There's no reason for people to live suffering the way they do. By the way, speaking of Minneapolis, which I believe Mark mentioned a couple of times,
yep,
these green cities, one of the things they're doing in Minneapolis is organizations of homeless are moving homeless families into these vacant houses and saying, we will not be moved. I think that spirit has got to guide us in figuring out what the hell we're going to do about this crisis. People are hurting, and the same old, let's rebuild Reservoir Hill again and again and again, just ain't going to make it.
Well, Mike, I appreciate the call, and I can see Bob Strupp wants to say something here. I want to take up two of the things that you talked about. Bob, go ahead.
Well, Mike is right, and one of the things that's being talked about, and it's out there now, is this whole concept of home sharing. And, we have this myth that we've created where everybody should have this white picket fence American dream home ownership, and it's not reality. And for some people, they might not be homeowners at all. And for some, it may be that they can't fly solo and do it on their own. We could have families buying houses together, and we can have, homes owned and have other people renting rooms, and we can have go back to some of that communal concept that Mike was talking about. And so I actually do think that there's something to be said for that, and some things that need to be explored about people coming together and buying a property jointly, for example.
I think that's part of what we're talking about here. I mean, I think that thinking about ways of taking this this land bank we have and this properties that we have, and thinking about doing things in different ways. Bob Strupp and I were both part of this Facebook conversation that Ken Strong started about how you think about cooperative housing and building housing in a different way so people actually have places to live that they can afford to live in. I mean, Jasmine wrote in, and I'd say she wrote it on our Facebook page. I was just checking it out. She wrote in, please, any information offered for renters, another BGN increase will push me right out of Baltimore. I continue to exhaust all options in order to keep a roof over my head. Too many increases whereby my earnings remain the same, just a renter's 2 cents. I mean, we have to begin. Why does it have to be, let's say, the city owned this property? Instead of saying to any developer, whether I don't want to mention names and get in trouble here, but any developer that I can think of, and saying develop this property, why not a neighborhood or nonprofits and cooperatives saying we're going to form a cooperative to have co-housing and build a different kind of housing in Baltimore that people can actually afford to live in and move into while they're raising their families? I mean, that's what I'm talking about thinking about it in a very different way. I mean, if homeless people are taking over empty homes, well, what about something, Craig Garcia? You've taken over this home. The city owns the house. Well, let's figure out how you, the homeless people, can live in this home and live together here and build something new rather than making confrontation. That's what I'm talking about when thinking about how the city can use its power to think differently about how our housing should be.
I think that the land bank is a wonderful laboratory. It will be a wonderful laboratory, and any and all of those concepts will be considered and implemented, I'm sure, and to varying degrees, and many others that we haven't even thought of here. There is no prescription here. We're not other than the statutory limitations on power and so forth. The authority of the land bank. The only limitations are the creativity of the human mind, and I think the point is we really want an entity that is flexible, that is nimble, that is creative, that has an ear to the ground and hears what community-based folks are thinking about, and that is respectful of all ideas. And so I think it's an opportunity to do all those things and more.
Can we open the phone? Is either one of you want to make a comment here? But otherwise, we'll open the phones.
Please, well, ahead, I agree that we need to have a variety of ways of ownership, a variety of rentals, housing for every type of family out there. What we're promoting is a type of shared equity. If mom and dad don't have the money to share your equity, well, maybe a nonprofit will. And again, that's just one type. Mm-hmm. I think it's important as the land bank goes ahead to recognize there's a need for big scale redevelopment, but there's also a need for neighborhood-based and neighborhood-controlled development as well. So those options can be created by the people who want to live there.
Let me piggyback on that, because I want to be clear about one thing. There's been some misperception, or maybe it hasn't been fully articulated. The land bank will not be the major redevelopment agency in the city. Those powers will continue to be within the housing department. So there was some concern about this entity having vast power and being out there independent. Remember, any project that involves an urban renewal plan, which means to say we define an area and we come up with a plan, and there's eminent domain power and all that, that will go through this exactly the same process that we have today, which is to say a lot of planning, grassroots planning, putting together something, hearings with the Planning Commission and the City Council, adoption, and then our department will move forward with it. And then at the other end of the line, we do RFPs, and then we select the developer and we submit it to the Board of Estimates.
But what I'm saying, Paul, but you have in this process, again, with all due respect, you have a huge amount of power.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you hold two city hats in terms of housing.
Right.
You're putting together the land bank. You're going to serve on the land bank board. I mean, you have a powerful key to making something creative work or not making it work.
Right.
I mean, because you have, I mean, you're in all those levers of power. Right. And it's not, you know, I mean, you have more power in some ways than many people in the city when it comes to doing this stuff.
Well, but what my point is, I wanted to clarify that if there was a concern out there that major redevelopment projects are going to be undertaken outside of the city system, that process would remain the same. What we might do is use the land bank to help us assemble the sites under our eminent domain authority, but the design and the passage of the urban renewal legislation up front and the solicitation process and the public vetting and the selection of a developer would be all under the same current rules. I think that further assures that the land bank will be focused on those community-based efforts. And yes, there will be some larger assemblages in some of those communities, but there is an awful lot of land out there, a lot of dispersed parcels. There really are. There are tens of thousands of dispersed parcels, and it's going to take some real creative thinking because in a lot of cases we have to kind of fill in the gaps in between and figure out ways to get buildable lots even.
Let's open the phones again as we look at the future of housing in Baltimore City with our three guests. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com or jump on my Facebook and write it down, and I'll check that out and get you on the air with your thoughts there as well. Tracy, you've been holding on a while. You're back, and you're on the air.
Yes, I'm back. Good evening.
Good evening.
And thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
You know, And one thing I want to make sure that you know that this is all with due respect. But we're going to get some stimulus money. The city of Baltimore will get stimulus money. My question is, why don't we look into solar power, putting solar panels on every home in Baltimore?
Amen to that.
You see, the gas and electric people, they daggering us to death. We need some innovative thinking. You know, you're talking about the president shunning Sheila. Well, let me tell you something. Do you blame him? You know, look at our city. Look at our murder rate. It is nothing positive, no innovative thinking going on. And again, let me say this. This is all with due respect. But I get so, you know, I get so fed up. Now, we're going to get some money. It's nobody talking about training young guys and girls to make solar panels and to install them. Can you imagine what that would do for the elderly and for homeowners who are scuffling with their gas and electric? Can you imagine how much help that would be?
Tracy, I'm sorry, finish what you're saying, then I'll jump in here.
That would really be a help. That would really be a help. But no, nobody's thinking about nothing. That within itself will bring, it will bring money, more money into the city.
And you have a really critical point. I tried to raise it earlier. I think it's really important, Bob Sharpe, to look at you about to want to respond to this. There's enough room in this city, in certain neighborhoods, to create solar panel farms with certain investment that could light entire communities, that could give the electricity and heat to entire small communities in the city. And that's the kind of thinking that Tracy's talking about, and putting those young people to work and putting fathers and mothers to work to take care of families, to learn this stuff. That's exactly what Van Jones and his project Green for All is talking about in San Francisco when talks about rebuilding our urban communities. I mean, Tracy, I think, is on to something.
Yeah, he is. And I think he has an opportunity, as do others, to get involved in this because actually the mayor, I think, has been somewhat innovative with the Office of Sustainability, which
he
is really – this is an opportunity to deal with that issue. And I've gone to a couple of those public meetings, and I think there is an opportunity to address learning how to implement solar panels, for example – and other environmentally conscious ways of providing energy and, quite frankly, producing some alternatives to the monopoly that BG&E has in terms of the utilities in the city. So there is something happening, though, and I would encourage Tracy to look at and contact the office.
And to stay tuned to the show. We're going to be talking a great deal more about that. There are a couple of questions here directly for – but could you want to jump in here? Because I do want to get one more
Well, there are some nonprofits that are talking about training people in green technologies with – the NSP and the stimulus funds.
Right, right.
And there is a great infusion of weatherization funds. Now, I know weatherization sounds boring compared to solar panels.
It's critical and key.
But that will help the caller pay his BGE bills.
It's not as sexy as solar, but it is.
No, but it's really important.
We're talking a 15 to 20-fold increase, Mark, in the weatherization funding, somewhere between 15 and 20-fold increase in weatherization funding. That is a mind-boggling increase. That's the commitment that the President Obama has, and I think we're very, very excited about that.
410-319-8888. Karen, in your car, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Hi, Karen.
Great talking and listening to the show.
Great.
I know that Towson had a design charrette on trying to figure out what to do with the downtown area. And I think this would be an opportune time to do something similar with the Baltimore City urban planning issues. You know, you could have it at Morgan State. You've got architecture students. You could bring in community people and just spend several days, full days, hashing some of this stuff out. I mean, there's enough creative juices in this city that I can't believe we can't arrive at some really innovative concepts.
I love that idea.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's about time. We need to shake stuff up. And change is here, and we need to jump on the bandwagon.
Well, as Bob pointed out before, the Sustainability Commission is just a cauldron of great ideas and people coming together in that fashion. We do a lot of that charrette-style planning. on a neighborhood basis for projects throughout the city, and I find to be very, very effective and very connecting, you know, in terms of getting people together. But in terms of more global ideas, I think that the Sustainability Commission is a great vehicle.
And we are planning a show on sustainability. We hope for this week. If we're planning on it now and with our Sustainability Commission, to bring that to the airwaves. Let's try another quick call in here, William in Baltimore. Very quick call. Very quick thought.
Hello.
Very quick, William. We're almost out of time.
Yes, I'm planning to retire in 2014, and I want to know if you mentioned there are many dispersed parcels of land that I don't know if any of that is part of your mainstream that's available for the regular person to purchase.
We have about 15 seconds.
Absolutely. We will sell everything from multi-acre sites to single houses. Absolutely.
Bob, let me just 10 seconds.
Point out that there is currently a program available, Commissioner, of course,
Scope.
The SCOPE program.
Scope, absolutely.
And the Community Law Center is honored to be part of that in terms of doing the due diligence for people who are looking to buy the properties, as well as the involved with lending money and the brokers who are involved in those transactions as well. So this gentleman might look at SCOPE.
Let me just tell all of you, if you didn't get through today, all the people who called in, you can write to me at markbsteiner@gmail.com, and I'll get your emails, pass them on to my producers. We'll continue looking at this subject together. Thank you all for calling in. Thank Robert Strupp, Paul Graziano, and Karen Blandford for joining us today.
Thank you, Mark.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Jessica Phillips and Justin Levy. We're engineered by Zachary Coleman. Our interns are Christina Arison, Judith Lloyd, and Brian Boone. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, to podcast any of our past shows, and to hear additional interviews, visit us at steinershow.org. Reminding you of the Urbanite is sponsors this show. It hits the road with an issue of travel stories, and you can pick it up at over 800 locations region-wide and online at www.urbanitebaltimore.com, and listen to The President's Night and talk about it here tomorrow at 5 p.m. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Miku, Baltimore's credit.